Blog Talk Radio.
Regardless of the content.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
So when people try to figure out how to make $1 million, they have no idea how daunting that is. Because if you know how to make $1 million, you're going to make it tomorrow. But since you can't figure out how to $1 million idea, you go somewhere and sit down. That's the wrong approach. If you apply your gift, your God-given gift that he gave you, you have millions already at your disposal. If you break it down inch by inch into things of sense, or the 10 by 10 theory, which is very simple. You don't need $1 million idea. You need a $10 idea. You need something that you do, your gift that God gave you, to make $10. That's all you got to be able to know. I don't care if it's cutting hair, cutting somebody's grass, washing somebody's car. I don't care if it's mowing somebody's lawn. I don't care if it's driving people to their destinations. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's baking cookies or pie. You have some braiding somebody's hair. You have something that you can do so well that someone will give you $10 for it. Write my paper for me. Do this for me. Somebody give you $10 for it. Once they give you $10, all you got to do is whatever you did to get that 10, do it 10 more times. You now, my friend, have $100. You have $100 simply because you took a $10 idea and you did it 10 times. Well, guess what? If you take that $100 that you made since you've done it 10 times and you do it 10 more times, I got news for you, my friend. You now have $1,000. $1,000, you make $1,000. Guess what all you got to do? You got to multiply that effort again. Do whatever you did to do $1,000, do it 10 more times. My friend, you now have $10,000. You got $10,000 now. Imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. Just imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. That's $120,000 a year. But I got news for you, my friend. Whatever you did, whatever it took to make yourself $10,000, all you got to do is do it 10 more times. 10 more times, my friend, you now have $100,000. I got news for you now. If you can make $100,000, you're just a step away from being a millionaire, man. Because now you hire a few more people to help you out that you can do portions of what you do so you can duplicate that effort. And one more time, just one more time, do it 10 times. Man, that sounds hard. It is hard. But what else you got to do? What, you going to stop at the 100,000? All you got to do is duplicate your efforts by 10. You duplicate your efforts by 10 times 100,000. Welcome to the club, my friends. You are now a millionaire. Congratulations. You became a millionaire with a $10 idea. So stop bogging yourself down trying to figure out how to make a million. Do what you can do to make $10. And then do the 10 by 10 theory. Inch by inch, anything's a cinch. Now here's the joyful part. Along the way, when you was down here making $20,000, but you did right here, and now all of a sudden you're making $30,000. Now you're making $100,000. But on the way to duplicating that times 10, you may stop along in here at $250,000. You got making $250,000 a year. That's way better than that $20,000 you had when you started. So there's joy in the process. Your life is actually a lot richer at $250,000. It'll become even more richer at $500,000. It becomes even richer than that at $750,000, $750,000. If you don't get to the million, man, you're going to trip because you're making $900,000 a year? No, you're going to be happy. But you don't make the million, so you only make $700,000 a year? You can't find happiness in $7,000? Something wrong with you, man. There's joy in the process. That's how you make $1,000,000.
There's going to be a lesson, and there's going to be a blessing. Every failure is a lesson and a blessing. Every failure, there is a lesson and a blessing. Let me tell you something. You know how many mistakes I made? Last January, I hosted Miss Universe. What you laughing at? Why is your ass laughing? I made this mistake in 89 countries. Now here's the way God works. Tell you how crazy this is. On my vision board, the part you don't see, because I have another list. I have one. I can't show you this because it's not going to show up. But I have a morning gratitude prayer. And you can't see it, but this is everything I wake up before I talk to my wife. I thank God for about 64 things before I ask him for anything. Then after that, it's about another 50 things that I'm asking him for. With all I have, I got about 50 things that I'm asking for. One of the things on my list that I asked God for was to increase my global persona. I want to increase my global persona. I want my message, my motivational speaking, to go global, worldwide. I want to share with more people
how to become successful, and teach it to them real simple. See, I ain't saying nothing heavy today. If you don't understand me, something wrong with you. You ain't gonna make it. Thanks for coming. Because you're super slow if you ain't getting my time. Because I ain't no brilliant cat. I just know how to keep it real simple, right? So in asking God to increase my global persona, he made me the first African-American host ever in the history of the Miss Universe pageant. But he didn't stop there. He allowed me to make the biggest mistake ever made on national global television. That mistake, 48 hours later, I was trending so hard on Google and social media, my name in 48 hours had been typed in 4 billion times. In 48 hours, after a week was up, Steve Harvey had been Googled 7 billion times. I did not appreciate the way God chose to increase my global persona. I didn't like that one at all. I was a little ticked off with God for a minute. Because in truth, what happened was, it wasn't a mistake I made. I just ate it for everybody. See, the teleprompter, I'm a smart guy. I've been on TV a long time. And the new 2015 Miss Universe is? That's what the teleprompter says. The IBF in my ear says, read the next name. We have rehearsed it this way for 3 days. It was only 2 names on the card. They put a third name in the corner, never told me. We had changed. It wasn't going to be no first runner-up. The guy said, read the next name on the card. Hold now. Next name on the card, Miss Columbia. Great job, Steve. Go for the setup to close. I go in the back. I'm chilling. Steve, you killed it. I know. Steve, you good. You're the greatest. Won't he do it? Then all I heard was cussing. I just heard white people in my ear just cussing. What do you mean? That's the wrong name. The guy said, we'll straighten it out tomorrow in the media. I said, no, we straighten it out tonight. I walked back out there on my own. I didn't tell them that the teleprompter was wrong. I didn't tell them that the dude told me to say this in my ear. I didn't tell them that they changed the car from her. I stood there and I ate it. The way my father raised me. Be a man. Go out there and open up. If I'd have blamed the teleprompter, he'd never work in Hollywood again. The director would have been fired and out of work. Cue card lady, her job gone. I got 5 shows. I take this hit. So I took it. Boy, they laughed at me. People I thought was my friends turned on me. They were doing memes on me. Oh, they was that key. Y'all ain't still mad. They talked about me. I got death threats from Columbia. We have 24-hour security inside of our gates now because of Miss Universe.
Wow.
People was coming by my house, man, taking pictures. Them Colombians was mad, man. You know, this is the drug cartel. You got to be serious with these people. And they're going to get it done wrong. I don't even know Spanish, but I know when I'm getting cussed out. I don't know what punta is, but I was punta so many damn times. I don't know what it is, but I was one. But behind every mistake, every moment of adversity, there's a lesson and a blessing. The lesson was, I learned something that day. From now on, before I do anything, I double check everybody. So that's the lesson. So now, Steve Harvey, I don't care what the teleprompter say. And we're going to talk to some people first. That's the lesson. Here comes the blessing. 4 weeks later, T-Mobile calls. They say, Steve, we want you to do a Super Bowl commercial. They said, we're going to do a spoof on the Miss Universe thing. I said, I'm not doing that, man. I'm sick of that. Then they told me how much they paid. So I went and shot the Super Bowl. I made so much money and charged them so much money for one commercial that it paid for everything I had for 2 years. Then I turned around and now I am part owner of the Miss Universe pageant, Miss Teen USA, and Miss America. There's a lesson and a blessing. Yeah. You got to hang in there with it when it gets funky for you. Yeah.
Right, right.
Now, y'all, I'm telling you all this because I'm telling you some things that's going on. But God wants you to be great. Being rich is okay. But in order to get where you're going, you got to remember this. Everybody come with you can't go with you.
Amen.
Uh-oh, this is the hard part. So listen to this carefully. Everybody come with you can't go with you. You got to get like-minded people around you. You got to surround yourself with everybody on the same page. I told you, these dudes, look at this picture. They going out on a hunt. Look at their face. They serious, man. Ain't nobody play. They don't bring the Cubs. The Cubs can't make it on this trip. Everybody come with you, can't go with you. When it's time to kill to eat, you got to get like-minded people around you. Everybody come with you, can't wait. If you're too old, you can't rest this hunt up. Sorry, you got to stay back at the house. You got to surround yourself with like-minded people. It's time to go get it. I told you, I ain't bring these just because I was here. All these on my phone. Everybody come with you, can't go with you. Sometimes you got to cut your family loose. Sometimes your friends is the one. Association brings on participation.
Yeah.
If you're sitting around friends and all they doing is getting high, guess what you're going to do? You're going to get high with them. What, you stupid? If all your friends is talking about we going to gang bang, we going to slang this dope, we going to rob and steal, guess what you're going to do? You're going to sell dope. You're going to rob and steal. If all your girlfriends is always gossiping, guess what you're doing? You listening. So instead of going out on your mission, you sitting around gossiping. Sometimes in order to get where you're going, you got to cut some people loose. Let me teach you this here. This man told me one time, if you ever watch a rocket ship that's blasting off, you'll notice that it's four tanks around this rocket ship. 5, 4, 3, 2. You'll notice two of them stay on the ground. And that rocket starts coming up. Two of them stay attached to the rocket. But you watch that rocket, and once it gets up so high, you see another tank fall off. Then you watch the rocket get a little bit higher. The last tank falls off because it's necessary to rid yourself of the dead weight so that you can orbit as high as God has intended for you. But you gotta lose these people. See, everybody come with you, can't go with you. Yeah, we was friends and we was homies. Yeah, you might ride or die. But I'm trying to go somewhere else now. Your negative attitude is slowing me down. Your gossiping is always, your hatred is pushing me. You got to go. You got to let that tank go. Now, you want to go to where God got for you, or you want to hang on with your friends? What you going to do? Everybody come with you, can't go with you.
I'd have had some things happen to me, man. President Obama's transition team
was getting off a plane one day. Assistant called and said, Steve, it's President Obama's transition team. President Obama and I were friends. I've interviewed him. He's been on my talk show. I've been to the White House and interviewed him. He's been on my radio show more than anybody's show. I go to their parties. We friends. So his transition team called me around the 9th of January and said, Steve, the president feels like it's important that we sit down and have a conversation with this new administration to see if there's something we can work out. Not President Obama, just his transition team from White House. I said, okay, cool. Next thing I know, the Trump administration transition team gets in touch with the Obama transition team. My name come up. So on January 13th, they asked me to come to Trump Towers to meet with Donald Trump. Now, the hell I caught. The sheer misery for making that decision. I've been so many coons, Uncle Tom, sellouts. I was stunned. I mean, the brutality of what happened to me on social media behind visiting that man in Trump's house, it was alarming. But I'm sitting up in here and I'm trying to figure out, because you don't know, so since you don't know, here come the hate. Uncle Tom, sellout, coon, Steve Harvey, shoe shining, celebrity friends I thought I was really cool with, coming out talking about he ought to know better. Who? What the hell wrong with him? Whoa. If President Obama, the current president, and the incoming president say they want to talk to you, which one of you ain't going up there? Just raise your hand if you wouldn't go, so I can see how stupid you are. Just go ahead. I just want to see. This is what I be really wanting to say. See, I can't say none of this in front of another group, but since it's us in here, oh, I've been wanting to say this since January 13th. You better believe this right here. I've been waiting on the right crowd. Well, I'm in front of a bunch of friends right now. So see, I can say this because I'm around a bunch of friends. You understand? Friendship is essential to the soul. You can live without your father. You can live without a relative. You can make it without your mama. You can't live in this world without a friend. Friendship is essential to the soul. Oh, Philly, my Philly, I super. That friendship is essential to the soul. Yeah, I've been waiting on this. I'm glad Ricky Lewis asked me to come. So I go up there. President Trump did not know why I was there, but he was accommodating. I'm going to give the man this. The man was very congenial. As we said that, we talked about golf. I played golf at his golf courses a lot. I don't play well, but I play. We talked about that. He's really good genius. And we're sitting there, and he thought that since we shared a common friend, Mark Burnett produced Apprentice, and Mark Burnett produces my new show, Steve Harvey's Thunderdome, that I was there to talk about possibly doing some type of program. I said, no, sir, I'm not. So it got around to it after 25 minutes of talking. He said, so Steve, what can I do for you? Now, I had thought of what I would say when I got up there. So I said, well, there's really nothing I want you to do for me. I said, I want to do something for you. And he said, President Trump said, you want to help me? I said, yeah. I said, you've appointed Dr. Ben Carson, the head of HUD, and I would like to help him because I don't think he has the celebrity or the name notoriety to get to these inner cities. I've been in inner cities my whole life. I got the key to 32 cities. I've been in stand-up a long time.
I said, I can help him with some of these urban situations because I'm from there. And I want to do something to help him. He said, so what do you want to do? I said, well, I have a mentoring program, but my mentoring program is restrictive because I can only do about 1,000 boys. And I can do them only one time a year in each city. I want to create vision centers around the country where I can take these schools that you're closing in the inner cities, take HUD funds, put it with them, and then go in and refurbish these schools and buildings and turn them into a place where boys and girls can come and learn life skills, and parents can come and learn financial skills, literacy skills, to make it. And then eventually, I would like to build vision homes around it to help support these communities so we have wonderful communities. I want people who are less fortunate to have a better way of life. He said, I like that. Let me get Ben Carson on the phone right now. I kid you not. In 2 minutes, he had Ben Carson on the phone. He put Ben Carson on the phone, and he and I started talking, and I introduced the concept to him of Vision Homes right there in the office. He said it's a done deal. Since then, the problem I had was, after the meeting was over, I was supposed to go downstairs by myself and go on over to the rope and address the media. President Trump said, Steve, I'm going to go down with you. All right. We get off the elevator. We walk up to the rope. All the cameras is on. And first thing he said, what we're going to do first thing in this office is replace and repeal Obamacare. I'm standing there. I went, look at the tape. Go back and look at the tape and look at Steve's face. Because I'm going, there ain't shit we said upstairs. I'm sorry. I mean, that's not what we said upstairs. But I was staring, and I'm sitting here going like I'm supporting this here. I ain't said nothing like that. So then when he walked off, I was standing there with Greg Calhoun, another frat brother, and Gerald Washington, a new, oh, Crump, what's up, man? That's my man right there. You a bad boy. Man, that's my man right there. I'm sorry. I'm a fan of his. Benjamin Crump, attorney. So I'm sitting here, and I walk up to the media, and I go, I'm just messed up because, man, it just looked like, and then next thing you know, all over social media, Steve supports Trump, repeal and replace Obamacare. We ain't never even talked about Obamacare. But that's what God said. And then after that, y'all did your boy. Oh, it wasn't white folk. It was y'all. This was an internal. White folk don't even know what Uncle Tom Coon is. Y'all was doing this here. Oh, you was doing your boy. To hell with my track record. Damn what I done in the past. You ain't sugar honey iced tea right now. I cleaned that up. See how I did that? I didn't want to, though. I wanted to go ahead and fire another one off, but I figured I had got too many in. You ain't sugar honey iced tea no more. Ooh, I don't like saying that. Black people took to social media, and boy, all my family had to close their accounts down because y'all was just lacing me. Not y'all per se. Most of y'all don't even, hardly any of you blog, but I'm just talking about us. And this went because I don't know why we love destroying each other. I don't know why we take such pleasure in when he gone. You know, I was talking to Kevin Hart the other day when he went through that whole thing about the girl. Kevin Hart said, man, it's amazing how they cheer for you on the way up because they love a success story. But then once you get there, their whole mission is to bring you down. And they was just on that social media just lacing me, man. Like I don't do nothing for black folks. Like I just ain't been black this whole time. What the hell you gonna call me a Uncle Tom, a coon, and a sellout? I'm
60 years old. You know what I done seen? I seen what everybody in this room that's 60 done seen. I done felt what everybody in this room done felt. How they gonna call you Uncle Tom and the Coon? Cause you at the top of the corporate ladder. Now some black person ain't got nothing. Wanna sit up and call you a Uncle Tom and a Coon, cause you done bettered yourself. Ain't that about la-di-da? You be wanting to go, man, I wish, you know, man, you be wanting to say something. But you know what, though? You can't say nothing. Cause my grandmama taught me something a long time ago. If you hang a sheet out on the line and you get some doo-doo on it, don't wipe it, cause you ain't gonna do nothing but smear it. She say, just wait till it dry. It'll fall right off. So when they kept on trying to, I just shut my mouth. I stayed quiet because I knew I had a purpose. Now, Brother Blue went with me to the first meeting with Dr. Ben Carson at HUD. We have started an initiative. The first one will open in Detroit because that's where Dr. Ben Carson is from. The Vision Center have been okayed by the White House. All because I took a step and went up there and said it. I didn't even come up with the Vision Center concept till the night before. Till the night before. I just told God, I asked God, man, just tell me what to say when I get up there. Because what I'm supposed to say? I don't even know what to say. What do I say to Donald Trump? I told him when we were sitting there. I said, look, man, I ain't vote for you. And I said, I put my whole radio show behind trying not to get you elected. I said, but there was a mistake got made. I said, we was playing checkers and y'all was playing chess. So congratulations on your win. Oh, and then he ain't my president. Well, he the president of the United States. Well, he's not my president. He's the president of the United States. He's not my president. When you get through saying that, he the president. And if you don't sit at the table and talk, you have no say-so on what they serve on the menu. So if you don't like what you eating, it's because you ain't at the table picking and choosing. We as black people got to get at the table. This ain't the white man's game. This is the game. Money is not white man's money. It's money. You get around real rich people. They don't care what color you are. As long as you got enough to be there, trust me, you know how this works. That's racism on every level. But we black, man. We can rise above this. So when they got through eating me up, me and Blue went up there. The first one they're going to open is a Vision Center in Detroit. It's going to take a school that was closed, reopen it with HUD funding. Going to support it with the right type of counselors and stuff and create a place for young boys and girls to come and to learn life skills. See, what our kids don't know how to do is dream. If you destroy the dream, the Bible says a man without a dream or vision shall perish. It never mentions if you don't have an education. I mean, congratulations if you got one. It's so helpful in a lot of things. But we got to get our kids to dream it. Then we got to educate their parents on financial literacy. We got to teach them life skills.
Stay tuned. There's so much more in store. Just leave the dial right where it's at, 'cause we will be right back.
All right. Today we gotta get a panel around this. We don't have one organized for today, but basketball player versus basketball entrepreneur. Basketball player versus basketball entrepreneur. You can also substitute that basketball entrepreneur for sports entrepreneur. And that's something I think kids need to be, anybody of any age can become a sports entrepreneur. This is, I think, is more lucrative being a sports entrepreneur. But in any event, we got a little trending topic news here to deliver. Brittany Griner, for those of you who know who she is, she's a If you follow the WNBA Women's National Basketball Association, Brittany Griner has pleaded guilty to Russian drug charges. And I'll read it from, where is this coming from? BBC News, British Broadcasting Corporation News. U.S. basketball player Brittany Griner has pleaded guilty to the drug charges in a Russian court, but has denied deliberately breaking the law. All right. In other words, she says there was no criminal intent. In any event, the Olympic gold medalist was detained in February at an airport near Moscow when the cannabis oil vape cartridges were allegedly found in her luggage. Brittany Griner stated, "I was in a rush packing, and the cartridges accidentally ended up in my bag," she told Kimke. Her trial began last week on charges that could mean up to 10 years of jail time in Russia. Griner's wife, Sherelle, earlier called on President Joe Biden to do whatever is necessary to secure her release. Mr. Biden told Sherelle Griner he is working to secure a release as soon as possible. All right, the basketball star had already sent the president a letter saying that she was terrified that she might be there, which means in Russia forever. Russian government officials have warned the U.S. not to make noise in public about the case. The hype and working on the public with all the love is, I like to plead guilty, Your Honor. Then this is apparently Brittany. I like to plead guilty, Your Honor, but there was no intent. I didn't want to break the law, Brittany Griner told the court in English. And Brittany's been over in Russia long enough. She's been over there for 7 consecutive years. She should know some Russian, but that's a whole nother podcast. Anyway, so, but there was no intent. I didn't want to break the law. Brittany Griner told the court in English. She said she would like to give her testimony later and needed time to prepare. Like, she's been there since February. Oh, but anyway. And maybe she's working on giving it in Russian. All right, anyway. The trial was adjourned for a week. Okay. Griner is one of the most successful players in the women's professional league in the U.S. with the WNBA team, the Phoenix Mercury. She has traveled to Russia to play basketball during the offseason and has been featured in the EuroLeague since 2014. Cannabis oil is illegal in Russia, but her high-profile arrest at the airport near Moscow came a week before the invasion of Ukraine. Well, she did admit she was in possession. And she did also say how it all happened. She was in a hurry to pack. I know how that feels, because I don't know how many trips, but I don't. I'm basically a square. I rarely drink, and I don't smoke anything at all. But I know there's a whole lot of times where I'll wait till the last, virtually the last minute, because I typically travel with, like, carry-on luggage. You know, if I can't carry it on a plane and put it in overhead, I don't deal with it. I don't even like to check it at the gate. Just carry, you know, go through the X-rays and carry it on and put it in the overhead. That's me. All right, I'll bite for that. You know, she was in a rush and packed the cartridges and didn't know. I mean, because I'm sure she, it, now I don't know where that, I don't know if she packed, now see, here's the thing. I don't know if she was headed back to the United States or was she headed to Russia. Now, if she was headed to Russia from the United States, because you see a picture of her, I mean, going through customs. I mean, not customs, but, you know, the X-ray thing. So she was popped in Russia. She was popped in Russia. And, but, once again now, you know, because some places, although I haven't experienced that. Now, hold it now. Even in China, when I was over there, all right, they ran me, you know what, they ran me through the, I ran through the screen twice. Oh, let me think. I landed over there, got off the plane with my luggage. You know what? Yep, they ran me through, and everybody that was, you know, all of us. Nobody, you know, that's the way they, their system. So, yeah, I went through twice over there. When I was going to Beijing, and then I didn't go nowhere, you know. I had a long layover. But anyway, so whatever the situation, well, yeah, hey, she admitted she was guilty, but now I don't know how to, because, you know, judges over here for the most part, hey, ignorance of the law is no excuse. That might be the same way over in Russia. Russia has a conviction rate of 99%. That's way higher than what it is in the United States. Well, she's made she's come on out with it, her plead, and the case is supposed to, or the trial, as they call it, is supposed to resume next week. So I'm sure there's stuff going on in the background that we're not, that the public will probably never be privy to. So we'll see what, you know, I don't know how the Russian system works. Over here, you can take a trial by jury, or you can take a trial by judge, a bench trial, as they call it. So I don't know if they had that same system over in Russia. But we'll see what, says. And if she is convicted, she's already pleaded guilty. So seems like an open shut case. And it just comes to the penalty phase. Will she have the options of probation? Will she have to do any prison time? Obviously, this is her first offense, probably ever, but definitely first offense in Russia. So, will they be lenient? I mean, she could get up to 10 years, but first offense, and I don't know how this concept works over there in Russia. But, you know, because you can get, if there's anything like the United States system, I mean, first offense, all right, you can get, probation. Or you can get maybe, let's say, 10 years, but 10 years suspended, provided you do 3 months, 6 months, or what have you. Or 10 years suspended, but, you know, you got to do community service. You go into a parole, what do you call it, a parole officer? You know, I don't know what kind of latitude the system has or the judge has in Russia. So that'll be interesting. And then you got the backdrop of, you know, could she possibly be used in a prisoner exchange when you've got other detainees who are American soldiers, I believe, that were in there before her. So, you know, we don't know how it's going to play out or whatever. But hopefully in 7 years, though, she has developed some type of social capital from her teammates, some of the community that she played ball in, the team owners, and, you know, anybody locally that she's met in Russia in those 7 years. So hopefully she's got some social capital over in Russia. And if I was her, I would be spending that time because the Cyrillic alphabet isn't that difficult to learn. And, you know, pick up a, you know, sorry, Your Honor, learn how to say that in Russian. Won't happen again, Your Honor, learn how to say that. She's got plenty of time to learn some basic Russian between now and next week. And she's got a whole bunch of tutors in there, too. So anyway, that's how I'm looking at that's the latest trending topic on that. Now, like I say, we can talk about that or anything you guys want to talk about. I did have up here basketball player versus basketball entrepreneur, I'll just put this out here. Brittany Griner is a basketball player, female basketball player, professional basketball player, and she's a player, though, but she's not a sports or basketball entrepreneur. When I say basketball or sports entrepreneur, I'm talking about the person who makes the shoes that she wears playing a game, the person who owns that company, they're basketball or sports entrepreneurs. They're sports manufacturers. They manufacture shoes, athletic shoes. They make more money than Brittany Griner does. The person who makes the uniforms, the trunks, and the jersey, the basketball jersey, earns more money than the highest paid professional athlete on the planet. The company that sells the rubber to the shoe company to make the shoes earns more money than an athlete wearing the shoes. And that includes the shoestrings. You know, the dyes that make, you know, that you dye into the shoe. There are seamstresses who sew those. Matter of fact, the guy or the woman who might be in Vietnam, Burma, or hold on, Burma's got a new name, Myanmar, maybe India, possibly Laos, China's mixed up in there somewhere, maybe Indonesia, somebody in Southeast Asia who's a seamstress, or better yet, the sports entrepreneur that doesn't even know how to play the game, doesn't know the rules of the game, but they own the company, they own the sewing company, the seamstress, the sewing company that employs seamstresses, they earn more money than she does, or even LeBron James. And they just make the uniform. She plays in stadiums. And I call these people sports entrepreneurs, okay. The person who is into building the stadium where these athletes are going to play earns more money than LeBron James. And I'm picking LeBron James because he's like at the top of the food chain in the basketball world. And he earns more money than Brittany Griner. So for people that are looking for a career change or youngins that you cut, hey, it's all right if you got cut from the team, if you didn't go out for the team, you had no, that's great. Learn how to sew uniforms. Learn how to make socks. Learn how to make shoes. You know, learn the building trades. And your niche might be building stadiums. That might be your niche. All you do is you build arenas. You build athletic fields. You know, she plays basketball. The person who manufactures the basketballs earns more than she does. So, Brittany, if you are banned from playing in Russia for any amount of time, because that could be another thing. They could ban her from entering Russia for a certain amount of time, because people get caught with drugs all the time, or some type of infraction. Let me put it that way. A lot of people, internationally, they overstay their visa and whatnot, so they're typically, although drugs is a little bit more serious offense, but a lot of people all the time are banned from re-entering the country for a certain amount of time because they overstayed their visa. This is not a case of that, but they overstayed their visa. And they might have to stay out for a year, 2 years, 3 years, or whatever the case might be, and then they can reapply. And a lot of those people are allowed to come back into that same country that told them they couldn't come back, you know, couldn't come in. And I'm sure there's some cases of people who got busted for drugs, were banned, but they hired a lawyer and went through the system, time passed, and they were able to come back in. That's even with a drug charge. So life is not over for Brittany Griner. I don't know what her sentence will be, but she didn't kill nobody, so I'm sure she'll bounce back off of her feet. But if her Russian Russian basketball career is over, or whenever her basketball career is over in the WNBA here in this country, she can always become a sports entrepreneur or a basketball entrepreneur. And typically basketball or sports entrepreneurs, they do not play the sport. Also, what's interesting about this is what I like about sports, and I rarely follow sports, you know, but you've got coaches that are making millions of dollars. You have players that are making, you know, six figures and seven figures. And what I like about the sports field is very little regulation. And you don't have to have – there's nobody coaching in the NBA or on a college level who has a bachelor's degree in coaching or playing. I've said this on here before. Look for the industries – where there is little or no government regulation. Look for those places. Look for those, you know, you're going to be a pioneer. But, and some of those industries might be regulated one day, but that's where you'll find the new jobs popping up and the new growth. The NBA is, how old is the NBA? The NBA is, I wouldn't say, hold it, NBA, age of, league, but the NBA's got some regulation to it, and so is the NFL, but It's 76 years old. So I'm kicked. For instance, I got a high school coach. One of my high school basketball coaches, he and another coach, if they didn't start the first one, they were one of the first that started a basketball camp when nobody had a basketball camp. Right in Washington, D.C. It was called Metropolitan Basketball Camp. Now, he passed away probably a couple years ago, probably at the beginning of the pandemic or right before it. But his son, because he's had other children, his son, who took over the basketball camp, now earns over $500,000 for the summer months running the basketball camp. Now, I'm just looking back at the time machine, okay, because there are other ways to be a sports professional. You can be a sports professional without actually playing the sport. And I'm not talking about refereeing or officiating or coaching or nothing like that. But like I said, look, that's why I put out the examples. Sports manufacturing. You know, somebody's making a bunch of money off of uniforms, even shoestrings, building stadiums and arenas. You know, who's got the lawn contract for the football stadium? Somebody's got that. Who's got the maintenance contract? And you can break maintenance down to a whole bunch of subfields. Plumbing, you know, who supplies the cleaning supplies? You know, who manufactures the cleaning agents, the detergents and the soaps that are used with? So it's like, and you don't hear kids or high-paid athletes, none of them talk about that. And that's what I call sports entrepreneurship, or if you specialize just in one sport, just one. There's billions of dollars there. And then somebody's making that. But a lot of those people don't live in this country. But that's all right. It's a free enterprise system on the global level. And I'm just putting out there for food for thought. But hopefully Brittany Griner she'll live. She'll live. All right. So, and this just came in on my phone before I go to the phone lines. There, your thoughts, if you have any, on the twerking politician and, hold on, let me get the state right, twerking politician. There's the twerking, I don't know if she's a state senator. Criticism abounds at the Rhode Island state senator twerks on TikTok. So what are your thoughts on this senator, state senator in Rhode Island, who happens to be a black woman? She took a picture on her own private time and loaded it up on TikTok of her twerking. And she was twerking upside down. So what are your thoughts on the twerking senator? Is it was she trying to get votes, or yeah, black women hit an all-time low? It's a polarizing thought, but she once again she did it on her own time. I understand she has she's a very good senator from what I've heard. But anyway, let's see if my phone, I'm trying to go to the phone lines here. And come on, open up. Can 314, your mic hopefully is open.
You got anybody else want to talk?
Tianaki, at the top of the list, you. So that's where I went.
If you got somebody else want to talk, let them talk.
No. Oh, Pianchi, you at the top of the list now.
I heard you talking about that. The guy that's over there in Russia needs to pay the time for the crime they committed.
Now, Pianchi is a woman. Brittany Griner is a woman.
It's a he. That's what
she
they
was,
say.
Now, all right, now.
You said his wife. You said the wife.
All right, Brittany Griner is a woman, and
you said she's a he.
Brittany Griner, if you don't know, Brittany Griner is a woman married to a woman. So the etiquette,
she's the husband, and the other person is the wife. That makes.
All right,
the same-sex
couples.
You ever listen to her voice?
I have listened to her voice. And it does sound.
That's a man.
Well,
no chest,
from all the reports
no chest
I've heard, from all the reports I heard, Brittany Griner was born a female. And claims to be a female, but I have heard her voice, and it does. I mean, she does
well,
have
the
a.
Thing,
uh-huh.
I'm telling my
and
kids.
And nobody's referred to her as trans.
That is
now.
A man. See, my kids gonna ask me, well, how is a woman and how is the woman a husband and this other woman is the wife? No. This person is a male. She claimed to be a male. She says she's the husband. And the other person is the wife.
Oh, I thought they referred to each other as wives.
No.
All right, because I thought with same-sex marriage, like Ellen DeGeneres, all right, she's in the same-sex marriage. So they refer to each other as my wife when, you know, whatever they do.
Well, that's not what this case. You're talking about this Griner person who's over
yeah,
there
right,
in Russia
well,
and broke the law.
I didn't, all right, that's the first I heard of that.
Over there in Russia and broke the law and won't the wife, she's pleading. He's pleading with Biden. Biden is not supposed to show them type of preferences.
True.
I mean, Biden don't have any say-so of what goes on in Russia's judicial system. That's what the problem is now.
You're absolutely right. The only reason why I think Biden probably said something was somebody with some political pull asked Biden for a favor. It's politics all behind that because you're absolutely right.
Yeah, well, here's
the president of the United States has absolutely no say-so on what happens in Russia. Not in this case. This is a local case in Russia.
I understand that. So why in the world do you want to get a person off that has committed crimes in other countries? Hell, you do that here in the United States. Like this last incident with this young man, unfortunately he loses his life, but he's running from the police and shooting at the police. Well, what the hell you think's going to happen when they catch up with you?
Mm-hmm.
Is these the people that say that they're African?
I believe so.
Well, you know what would happen to you over in Nigeria, Ghana, the Gambia, especially with the last president, Jammeh, he's gone. You'd be dead. They do not tolerate those type of actions. It's bad for the population.
Right.
That's all we see around here. Heck, if that's the case, Biden, you got over 800,000 blacks in prison. Why don't you let them out?
Well, you know, what about
Jamal? I can hear that he's a political prisoner. How about Chelsea McIntyre, better known as Asada Shakur?
You're right.
So why is all the emphasis on this person who goes over into a foreign country and violates the law and about ready to be sentenced? They need to put them up in the prison for 10 years, give them the maximum to set an example. That country don't want that type of activity going on.
That could happen. That could happen to her. That could happen to her.
And your prison here in the United States.
So she pleaded guilty. I'm assuming her lawyer advised her to do so.
Your prisoners here in the United States. Hell, you got prisoners go and commit crimes in September so they can spend the winter in jail? Where they fed, get to lift weights, or have libraries so they can try to come up with some type of legal defense to get themselves out? What about the victims?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there is a good explanation. You do the crime, do the time.
Well, she's facing 10 years, so it's supposed to resume next week, and we'll see what happens.
What about that other group that was over there in Russia, the Pussycats? You remember them?
I remember them. They did time.
And they Russians.
They had to do their time.
So you got foreigners coming into your country. Hey, you got these blacks here always complaining about foreigners coming in our neighborhood, selling pork and beer and all that kind of crazy madness. I don't understand it, L.A. As far as the basketball entrepreneurs, how many business opportunities exist in those? Enough to satisfy about 5 million people?
I don't know about that. Well, you're the stadium builder here. And I know nothing about it, but I think kids should be exposed to somebody like you with, all right, there's one thing, do you want to play in a stadium or do you want to build a stadium? And then discuss career opportunities and building.
What am I going to talk to kids about in building stadiums? You just don't walk off into something like that. That's years and years of preparation, exposure.
And I agree, but somebody like you, well, here's what I'm saying. If they're how many people have been, in seventh grade, okay, what do they call those things, career day? And you come in, all right, I'm Pianki, and this is what I do, and, you need to prepare. You're not going to just apply and get a job to build anything because you don't – you know, here are the phases that you go through. We haven't been exposed to that.
Yeah, see, people in those businesses don't go to no career fairs.
Mm-hmm.
Stadiums not built, 10 or 12 stadiums built a week.
True.
There ain't no 10 or 12 bridges built a week. No 10 or 12 office buildings, skyscrapers built a week. So that don't make any sense for somebody going to a career fair talking about getting involved in doing that particular activity. You go to a career fair, you tell people to keep their butt in school.
Well, all right. Now, you didn't come out of the womb and pick this stuff up by osmosis. So I'm sure that you were exposed to it, and then just you went. For instance, you're in a position which you're already doing, with you can guide like your grandson, because you've been through certain things. You got
my
certain real world practical
no
experience. Well,
he don't want to give me bill. He came to me yesterday. He's starting his advanced degrees. He ain't getting in business.
Well,
and,
let me ask you this. What piqued your interest to get you interested in becoming a builder? And we ain't talking about no tiny house. We're talking about the kind of buildings you've built.
I worked in the industry for almost over 20 years before I had enough gumption to say I'm going to do it myself.
Okay.
Where you going to go to college? You can't go to Harvard and learn how to do that. You can't go to Yale. You got to know how this stuff works.
Well, and see, now everything you're sharing are gold nuggets. Okay. Well, you learned it on the job, right?
Most people
so you
say do.
You out there for 20 years.
You got to build
practical
reputation.
Hands-on experience.
You're not going to go in a city and put up an office building in the middle of downtown just about like that. You have to have a repertoire. Nobody's going to turn you loose with something like that.
I agree.
You have to have a repertoire of having done it.
Exactly. And you also, I'm taking for granted because I haven't done this, I'm also taking for granted the buildings that you spoke. You know the political side of it, too.
Well, you don't have to know the political side. You just know what you have to know what you're doing. Politics don't. Politics play a part in some things, but I don't talk to building no damn power. They're the last people I need to do. If you're going to go over into another country, now their procedures – they want to know, especially if they don't know you, they want to know what you've done and be able to show some supporting recommendations or examples of what you're doing. So the Communist China Party Construction Company has got examples all over the world, Three Gorges Dam, and the dam there in Ethiopia. In other places, Russia has the same thing. Damn, they're in Egypt. So when they go, they already know.
Okay. Well.
So don't nobody just wake up one morning and say, this is something I want to do. That don't work like that. Then, too, people are not going to trust you with their lives, especially in some of these applications. That's highly dangerous.
Yeah, you're right about that.
So I understand what you're saying, but it just don't work like that.
They need to gravitate to somebody who knows how it works.
A person want to have a concession stand in a stadium, that there shouldn't be politics involved in it.
Yeah,
that would be something. But talking about doing the landscaping and talking about the audio visual, you're talking about one or two people that probably is capable of doing that. And, you know, here's another thing, too. We talk about, I'm listening when your man was talking, Steve Harvey. And everybody was clapping. See, you got a preponderance of in black society like to cheer what somebody else is doing, but not what they're doing. And the people that's going to be able to do that is what you call your elite blacks, quote unquote. Just like you have any other ethnic group, they got the capital, mainly. And what they don't have, they can buy. Well, the average person can't do that. Get Reba on the phone. Ask her would she like to become a a company to put seats in the stadium. Well, she might like to, but she ain't capable of doing it. Because she don't have no background in that, no formable background.
I never thought about that, but there's a lot of seats in the stadium.
These stories and these suggestions are easy to spew out, but they don't have any substance because technically, and people that in the know don't even pay no attention to those conversations. They hear the words come out and listen to the overall summary of what you're saying, but when you get down to detail, they know it just ain't there.
Yeah.
You take this young lady, Brianna. Brianna, is that her name? Rihanna.
Brittany Griner.
No, the Rihanna, the billionaire young lady.
Rihanna, yeah.
She had a cosmetic line, I think.
Yeah, cosmetics.
Yeah, she had seed money to fund that. You had another guy, and I can't think of his name. He was in cosmetics, too. And
well, there's been a bunch of people in cosmetics.
Yeah, everybody want to do cosmetics. Everybody want to have a clothing line.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that. If you luck up and have a stance that it works out. But she had money because she was an entertainer and had discretionary funds which she could put toward that herself.
Right.
Now, most of these people that you call billionaires, they're billionaires on paper. They're not billionaires in actual tangible net worth.
Right.
Yeah, you look at the Bezos and Tesla and Elon Musk, those people lose $50 or $60 billion on paper because of market swings. That's not tangible money. That's not cash money. There's a whole lot of difference between net worth and when you're talking about net assets. Net assets is something that's liquid. It's sitting there. Big
right.
difference.
You're right.
They ain't rich like you, L.A.
I know. You got to define what's rich.
You got the money buried in the backyard. So, young people learn the fundamental of how things operate. I tell you something that young people should be learning. They should be learning how to speak with artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Coding, for instance. Because, what's wrong with your phone?
I'm here. But hold, you know what, Pianca, I need to take a real quick break here. So I'm gonna put this audio on. I'll come right back to you. Give me a couple of minutes. I gotta do something unexpected.
Before I get
here.
Started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She struck you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass. She a nigga. That nigga hurting himself. You from New State.
It's over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't called it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood. That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others.
Okay, well, for those who are not ready for the stadium, again, that's the process, stadiums and whatnot, but there are plenty of available neighborhoods where you can, I know in Baltimore there is, and probably places like Cleveland, Indianapolis, definitely Detroit, Buffalo, New York, probably Rochester, New York, and probably Niagara Falls, New York. There are probably at least 30-plus cities in the United States, many of them in the Rust Belt. Camden, New Jersey. Camden, New Jersey, used to, and that's right across the bridge from the river from Philadelphia. I don't know what it looks like now, but it looked like a war zone bombed some of those blocks. But it does take experience to know how to purchase those buildings, restore them, or even build new structures on vacant lots. Pittsburgh is another place where you've got war-torn areas, or just vacant lots. There's a lot of urban vacant lots, Chicago. But once again, you need to learn the landscape. You need to have some type of skill. But there are community colleges and night schools that they teach the building trades, and then once you get in, and circulate a little bit through networking, you'll discover opportunities that exist. All right. Now, I'm going back to you, Pionki, right here in a moment. Now, forget about the building part, the building trades part of it, but there's also, I also mentioned, you know, the uniforms. It's not difficult to get a sewing machine, and there's not rocket science on how to make sports clothing, sportswear, jerseys, trunks, pants. Pick your sport. You're going to concentrate on one sport, you're going to go with many other sports or whatever. But anyway, just food for thought. And once again, before I go back to films, now, from what I understand, okay, with Brittany Griner, she was born a woman. All right. I know what she sounds like, but she was born a woman from the sources that I know about. She's never been referred to my knowledge, and I don't know everything about her. She's never been referred to as a trans woman. And then among same-sex couples, they refer, like if they're male, like Elton John, all right, Elton John is in a same-sex marriage. he refers to his significant other as his husband, and his husband refers to Elton John as his husband. And the same thing with lesbians. So females, they be like Ellen DeGeneres, she refers to her as her wife, and Portia, I forgot, Portia DeGeneres, because she switched her name up too to the same last name. Portia DeGeneres, Ellen DeGeneres' wife, refers to Ellen as her wife. So, now the I guess, you know, I don't know how they work it, but anyway. But so Brittany Griner is a full out lesbian. Who, like I said, I know what she sounds like, but I haven't heard anything that she, what do you call it, hermaphrodite? She's not a hermaphrodite. She was biologically born female. So nobody, you know, but, you know, that's what I've heard. So they refer to each other as wives.
Well,
anyway,
her wife could refer to her as a husband.
That could have been, but I'm just saying.
No, it's written.
Okay,
it's,
if you heard
recorded.
It, you listen to this stuff. Well, hey, maybe that's the way they roll with it. Okay.
He's a he.
Okay, well, right now. Well, hold it now. Where did the name Brittany come from? I don't know no man named Brittany. Anyway.
Look, I don't know where the name came from. Maybe they call him Mr. Grinder.
It might be. I know
I
in the wedding pictures.
I just gave her
in the
more
wedding pictures.
I think I was giving, I was giving her wife and him more attention than I want to. The activity that they... engaged in their business.
It is their business. I know in their wedding pictures, and Griner's been married to a woman twice. So
he dressed with a suit, wasn't he?
Exactly. Wears a man's suit.
Well, so why are you going to call this man a female?
Hey, look, that's the way they want to be addressed. Like Magic Johnson, he's got a son. That looks
no,
like a football player, but he
Brittany,
likes to dress in women's clothing.
Yeah, but we're talking about Brittany. I don't know nothing about Magic Johnson's son. I think I've seen one picture of somebody who's supposed to have been that person, but this man wants to be dressed like a man, talk like a man, physique look like a man. So he's a man.
All right, well, that's Bianca's opinion on it.
That's what they, all the indication that they give, they're a man.
Right. Now, what's
and
your
then,
take on Bruce? What's your take on Caitlyn / Bruce Jenner? Now, on a biological level.
What did this person say they are? I don't know. You said that.
Bruce Jenner.
Brittany,
or Caitlyn
you said
Jenner.
Brittany wasn't a hermaphrodite. How do you know that?
No. I said I haven't heard anything about her being a hermaphrodite. I never heard
but how
like
would
that.
Anybody know? That's really getting personal, ain't it?
Well, yeah, I'm assuming that somebody from way back, I mean, she went through some kind of physical examination, so I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be private.
You know,
that's not supposed to be.
It
would still be hearsay. Where's the evidence? And the evidence wouldn't come out under normal circumstances. That's just ridiculous to even go there. Would you allow them to teach your children? I wouldn't, not no open one. It would be a surprise. I wouldn't want my child being taught by a open gay person. When the other half will come in the classroom and be kissing on them and that. Nope, nope. And you know,
fair enough, man. And you can put your child and your grandchildren in a position where they're not exposed to that.
Well, that's one of the topics of conversation today. You got an organization like Mass Resistance that's fighting that all over the country with what's being introduced and exposed to children in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they are fighting for parents who say they didn't want their child to be exposed to cross-dressers.
Yep.
You got a big black man dressed up like a woman with a rainbow wig and a Cinderella dress that
I wouldn't want that either. And you know what? I'm sure that's why you have parochial schools, Sister Claire Muhammad University, Marcus Garvey, those schools. I'm sure those schools think the same way, and you will not see a cross-dresser or a trans person in none of those situations.
Well, yes, and the basic element is that these school districts, these boards, are not listening to the parents, and worse off, parents not firing them and getting rid of them. Parents mm-hmm. got the power to do that. Get rid of the whole damn board. Get rid of the superintendent. That don't happen in black communities. Wonder why.
Right.
That would be a good show. Another show is, why is there such a big shortage of teachers in these public school districts?
I have to bring Warren Houston on this. I can tell you, in a public school system, and I haven't been in a while since the 80s, but matter of fact, in a place like Baltimore, I believe they're bringing in people from the Philippines or whatever. And a lot of those teachers don't know what they're in for. But when I was in the school system, and this was early 80s in D.C., and Warren can probably attest to this now, because I think he's still in the Houston school system, the students can basically, well, put it this way, I had to park my car 2 to 3 blocks away from school, and then at lunchtime I would go out and move it. And the reason why I did that is because I saw what some of the students did to another teacher's car. And they took the hood off the car. And I don't know where they put it, but they took the hood off the car. If they get a bad mark in school, you're subject to get violated some kind of way. They will hit. You can't hit them back. You can't defend yourself. And I saw a student curse out her vice principal, and her mother stood right there and didn't say a thing. So I said, well, if the vice principal yeah. can't get no respect, you know, come on.
So I got out
of the system because the front office in a lot of your public schools, not all, but a lot of the front offices, the principal, the vice principal, a lot of those people, the front office is not going to back you up in the classroom. That's why I got out of it.
Well, look, it's getting late on your show, and I don't want to be taking up the time, so I'm going to get off of here.
Okay. All
yeah,
right. I appreciate your comment. All right. Talk to you. Anybody else got any comment on basketball player versus entrepreneur, or comment on Brittany Griner? Brittany Griner, she has pleaded guilty in a Russian court, and they said they will resume her trial next week. So comments on Brittany Griner or any other trending topic that we brought up here. 410, your mic is open.
Coach up, Brother L.A., how you doing?
Hold
and
up, how you doing?
Everyone just in your listening audience. Very interesting conversations you're having. Look, Brother L.A., I told you maybe a couple of shows back I'm not going to support anybody with dirty hands. I'm of the opinion now that, well, I've been of the opinion that, hey, look, tough love has got to be administered in our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany Griner made a mistake. Talk, when you make your bed hard, you lay in it. Now, I feel sorry for her parents. I feel sorry for her relatives. But you know what? She was a grown-ass woman, if I'm not correct.
She is.
You know, I mean, she...
And a millionaire.
Correct. And the thing is this. Did you ever run into Butch McAdams when you was in D.C., Coach Butch?
Man, Butch McAdams, he coached me once. It was a tournament called the Ghetto Tournament. This is back in the 70s. And it was like a little, you know, spring break type tournament in high school. I know Butch McAdams. If he sees me on site, he'll know who I am. But yeah, I've known Butch since I was like 16 years old, man.
Okay, is he still around?
Yeah, he does a radio show on WOL every Sunday morning from like 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
Okay, when I was in the Maryland, D.C. area, I used to listen to his show.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a saying. I don't know if you heard him say it when he was coaching you.
I think he says it at the end of it. I don't listen to him every week, but he said, oh, man, what, it has something to do with the word stupid.
He said,
I know what term you're talking about.
Yeah, he said life is hard. Life is really hard. But it's even harder when you're stupid.
That's it. He says it at the end of all of his radio programs.
Well, now, you know what? He is exactly right. You know, look, life is hard enough out here as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard trying to just get through all of this bull. But when you're stupid, it's even harder. And this young lady,
from what I've heard, Brittany's voice, and she has a very deep voice for a woman. But from what I've heard from her parents and other teammates, she biologically is a woman. She's never claimed to be anything but a woman. So that's where I'm going by.
Well, here's the thing. Biologically, she has to be a woman in order to play in the WNBA. Okay.
Exactly.
So,
trans have been in that league yet. Right.
Right. So now mentally she might be something else, but biologically.
Well, I'm just taking for granted she's a lesbian. And, you know, today lesbians are lesbians. You know, you do what you want.
Well, you know, mentally she is, but biologically
she's
a woman. But the thing is, she knew the laws of Russia. Mm-hmm. And if she didn't know it, it was explained to her. You don't transport.
Oh, I'm sure. Before she made her first trip to Russia 7 or 8 years ago, I'm sure somebody laid it out to her.
Well, Brother L.A., you can get detained or arrested right here in the United States if you transport drugs across state lines.
True.
So with that being the case, in order for her to sacrifice that much money, and that much fame for a cheap high. I'm going to say this, Brother Elaine, you may disagree with him, but she deserves everything she gets. Because the thing is, she's a grown-ass woman.
Right.
She knows right from wrong. She knows the laws in the United States and anywhere else. And for her to take that risk, and the thing is, they might have planted it. I don't know. But for her to take that risk.
Well, now, she admitted, from what I read online today, because she said she was guilty. Well, she said her intent was not criminal. She said she was in a hurry to pack, and that's how I got into her luggage. And that's what she said.
Well, you know, good intent. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
It's paved with good intentions.
But the deal is this. she made a mistake, and you're going to have to pay for it. Old man told me one time, he said, you know what, you can get away with things for years, but the first time they catch you and convict you, you pay for all of those times that you got away. Now, we don't know how many times she's pulled that trick, but the deal is that one time pays up for all the other times that she got away with it. Now,
you know, that's what a traffic, I went to traffic school once, as most people probably do at least once in their life. And the instructor told us, because it's one of the traffic schools where, you know, you go there and sit there for a few hours to get rid of the points. So the traffic instructor said, just what you said, essentially, think about all the times that you didn't get caught speeding.
That's right.
That took the sting out of it. And she was right.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but this is a good teachable lesson for anyone out there that has that same mentality or that same idea that they could do something if they're willing to learn from it. But now, not only is her money at risk, her reputation is at risk, and God help if they send her to a Siberian prison. You know, in Russia. God, I mean, they say that, hey, look, that's worse than being in hell. But
yeah,
I want to go
yeah,
on
I understand
to...
it's not comfortable over there. Not comfortable at all.
Not by a long shot. But with this thing about basketball entrepreneurs,
I'm not talking about players who become entrepreneurs. I'm talking about somebody who just doesn't play at all, but gets into some type of entrepreneurial business that is connected with sports.
I had a friend that had a concession stand in Raven Stadium, and he made a very, very, very good living. And the thing is, you know, football don't have but just so many games.
Right.
Home. And the thing is, this gentleman live very, very well. Now, how he got into it, I don't know. I did go to a seminar one time where they were trying to get a lot of blacks into the airports.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't have that kind of skill to get in there. But the thing is, for those people that is able to go in and get one of those concession stands in those stadiums or arenas, it's well worth it. I didn't get into his business on how much it cost him to own that concession stand, but I do know he did very, very well. And I didn't know that much money was in there. But are you familiar with the Bishop or Reverend Peoples that had the campus there right outside of D.C.?
Where the Redskins play, or where formerly the Washington team played?
She had a church right there next to the stadium.
In PG County?
Yeah, PG County, yeah.
Yeah, that, man, I remember that family, because I think that her husband passed away years ago, and her son were in the pulpit. Yeah, but I'm familiar with who you're talking about, yeah.
Well, she has since passed away, and I guess her son, he some kind of way they were trying to figure out. Well, they kicked him out. He wasn't able to succeed the last time I heard.
Oh man, they kicked him out of the pulpit.
That's what I heard. Now I don't know whether they changed it or not.
Yeah,
because
his parents built that church, didn't they?
Yeah, his mother.
I mean,
built
they started the church. They started the church.
Yeah, his mother grew it. But the thing is,
right.
I heard that politics got him out of the loop. Now, I don't know whether it has changed or not. I got to get back with my cousin to find out. But I bought that name.
They started over in Northeast D.C.
Well, when I got there, they was out in PG County.
Okay, all right.
Now, I don't know, you know, the history
but
of it. But
before that, they were in Douglas Street. They were in Northeast D.C.
Papa Durham.
They were in Northeast D.C.
Did you ever go to that campus that they had?
I saw pictures of it, but didn't. You know, I didn't go out there. I drove past there, but didn't, you know, go on the grounds. I knew a couple of people that attended that church when they were in Northeast D.C. before there was even talk about going out to PG.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, when Snyder first bought that team,
mm-hmm.
they didn't have enough parking space, so they used her campus. Well, the church was so big until the church facility was so big until they call it a campus. But
right.
the overflow of traffic that used to attend those games, she used to average $50,000 a Sunday just for those people
Ooh.
To park there in her, just for the people to
just
park there
parking?
In her parking lot.
Man.
But now Snyder found out about, hey, look, this is a lot of money that I can get that I'm not getting. So he changed
it's
it for years.
$200,000 a month.
Well, $50,000
a Sunday. Well, they
didn't
have games every Sunday, though.
Yeah, but now you have what? In the National Football League, I think you have what? Is it six games home and six games
at
off? But
yeah, at least.
Anyway, for those six home games, she was averaging now, it could be more or less, $50,000 a Sunday just to let them park in her facility's parking lot. So there's money to be made around those.
And then there's
stadiums.
A lot of money to be made in tailgating.
Yeah, that too. But
mm-hmm.
when the Ravens was in town, all of those hotels, all of those restaurants, I mean, they were making money hand over fist around that stadium.
Oh, well, where the Ravens is, you already know, downtown, because they got the Camden Yards down there too. I mean, that's straight up in the Inner Harbor. So you're walking
right.
distance. I don't know what they got there now, but they used to have the Holiday Inn, which is probably still down there. Then you can walk over to the Inner Harbor where the restaurants are.
That's right.
And it's not too far from Fells Point.
No, it's right across the bay from Fells Point, you know. So
right. And
those
it's right,
people
I mean,
meet-
it's, the Parkway or the 95 is right there, so you can get out of town either way.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I used to complain about using taxpayers' money to build those arenas and stadiums, but after I found out the kind of money that those teams bring into an area and the jobs that is associated with those teams, I mean, you know, to support those teams, I kind of changed my mind about cities using that money to build those stadiums and arenas and getting professional teams in the areas. Because they do bring a lot of revenue into that area.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
So, and you know, I was looking at it from a black person's standpoint of view. Hey, look, you know what? They could probably build some new housing and everything else. But the thing is, for those teams to bring that kind of revenue into an area, you got to look at the investment that these urban centers put into them is well worth it, because the return is greater than the tax breaks and all of that stuff that they and building the stadiums. The return to the community is well worth the investment that they make to give those concessions to those professional teams. Now, you may or may not agree, but I'm just looking at how the revenue that is spent there, because, look, when those people come in town to support those teams, they bring in a pocket full of money,
they'll
spend the money. And the people that work those concession stands or own those concession stands, they're making a lot of money too, because, hey, look, when you have to pay $10 and $15 for a hot dog, I mean, that adds up. And look, those people don't spare no expense, because when they go in there, they go in there to have a good time.
Absolutely.
And the trick is, I just changed my mind about the revenue that those teams bring to the community.
Well, I know when I was in the D.C. school system, I had a student that, now this is when the Redskins were still playing at what I call D.C. Stadium, but others call RFK Stadium. And he was a student at the school where I was teaching. And he had a little concession set up, you know, not within the stadium, but he made a pretty good, he made pretty good money for a high school kid in 10th grade selling peanuts or whatever, you know, in the parking lot or wherever he was doing. But when they decided to, you know, we're not going to play in D.C. no more, and he lived right in the neighborhood. He lived right across the street from the stadium. So, you know, little things like that, you know, affect, and, you know, when they pull out, affect the neighborhood, when they come in, you know, people find ways to make money with it. I got a question for you. What, now, this deals with media. In your opinion, what do you think is the fate of AM and FM radio?
Brother L.A., I haven't played my car radio in years. And I used to be an avid user of my car radio.
Me too.
Now, if I was in the Baltimore, Maryland area, I'd probably still be listening to WOL and WOLB. Mm-hmm. But I have down here in the rural areas, I haven't played my car radio in years. Now, I don't know about you, but
I haven't. Even when I've been in a car, we might go on. Now with internet being in that, you know, mobile now, you can listen to podcasts or you can listen to anything online. The only time I play radio here at this house is when I'm going out for the dog, because she doesn't like to be alone, you know, alone. So I play it for the, you know, the dog. But other than that, I don't even know what stations it's on when I cut it on. But the three black radio stations with right where I'm at, they've all gone out of business.
I don't know how they're going to survive. Now, Sirius Radio, every now and then, if my cousin has it on in his car, I'll listen to Joe Madison. I don't know if you remember Joe Madison or not.
I remember Joe, but you know what? He's on Sirius now because he used to be on WOL.
That's right. I don't know whether he's on WOL or not, but my cousin listens to him religiously. And, you know, I get a chance to listen to Joe. I heard Bernie McCain, I think that's his name, Bernie McCain passed away.
I think he passed away. Yeah, I think he passed away.
Yeah.
It's been some time ago. I don't know when he died, but he did pass over.
Yeah, but when I was in America.
The reason why I'm asking that is because, and now I know like WVON in Chicago, they're still going strong, but they're still community-based. A lot of AM and FM radio stations stopped dealing with the community. They might pipe in somebody like Steve Harvey or Tom Joyner before he retired, or Ricky Smiley right now, but none of those people are local people. Just like you named Butch McAdams, you can hear him on WOL because now WOL goes online. You can hear him on Sunday. Now, I don't know if he has any local events connected with sports. But what I see coming up, that I don't think radio, AM radio, and FM radio will totally disappear, but these audio apps, if they go local, if people start picking that up, but it's still early on that. Now, you're in a rural area, so are you just strictly online or no local radio at all?
I'm strictly online if I do anything.
Okay.
This cell phone is really every type of media that you can think of. I can look at TV online, look at radio.
I consider the cell phone the new transistor radio.
Or better.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely better.
Yeah. Yeah, because
even a person on Section 8 can afford it. They can afford
and
it.
And the government gives them away. What do they call them? The Obama phones and everything?
Obama
so,
phones. Right.
Yeah.
Now, but here's what I was thinking. Because with these audio apps, and even with this podcast that we're on right now, what I want to do, because I got a crop of people that are on the ground in Chicago. So I'm looking at, you know what, now, because what local radio used to do in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and partially the 80s, you had a local personality, but a lot of these radio stations, you know, they said, well, you know, let's just automate and we can save money. So the local contest, the local radio stations, you know, it, like, see, Butch McAdams has a local show. I mean, well, no, he's got a show on WOLWOLB. But now you might be able to, he used to have things at a place in D.C. called Tacoma Station. I don't know if he still does since the pandemic. But I'm looking at there are people locally that would probably like to meet locally. But unless there's a call to action to meet locally, you know, I'm just looking at a totally untapped market that's there because a lot of pastors, they're online now. But in some of them, I guess you can go to their church if they have a church service because people are starting to go back out. I mean, yeah, go back out to places. But it just seems like, yeah, that solid listening audience that was there, like I said, now that you've moved to the rural areas, but rural areas have radio stations too.
Yes, they do. But
you know, if they're not the format you listen to, you don't listen to them.
No, and you know, I'm a baby boomer. I grew up on radio.
Me too.
And the thing is, look, even before this pandemic hit and all of this new media has come online, FM had just about completely put AM out of the radio business. You know, once it come online. So
true.
I just think that, you know, what you're thinking and what your vision is will work because, look, everybody has a cell phone.
Everybody
gets their information from a cell phone.
Right.
And if you can come up with the right niche, you can go ahead on and you don't have to try and get a lot of money. You just have to have the right content, as Bob Johnson said.
Right.
Because once it gets out, and you can advertise online, once it gets out, yeah. I mean, I was looking at a thing, and I'm like this year. I found a way to make a little bit of money without a lot of effort. But the thing that I was looking at, hey, look, you know, these pastors, since this pandemic has hit, they have found a new source of revenue by going online.
Right.
Especially down in the rural area. Because people can listen to these their sermons online, and all they do is they just say, well, look, you know, you can send your donations through
PayPal, Venmo. Right.
So that has really opened their eyes because before this pandemic hit, down in the rural areas, you had to go to the building. Now you
right.
don't have to go through the building, and they've set up these shopping carts and everything else where, hey, look, if you want to pay your tithes, you know, you can either call it in or you can drop it off to the church or you can go online and you can pay your tithes that way. And they have
yeah,
that system
true.
Set up. But I was looking at, hey, look, if you just ask and say, well, look, you know, I'm broadcasting And there's ways you can set that platform up. You can just say, well, look, if you want to come in and listen to my program, you know, hey, look, just use your debit card and I'm just charging 25 cents for the content. But I don't know how that would be done. But
yeah, what I'm looking at is having local events. Well, put it this way. First thing, local, I'll give you an example. Up in Chicago, she was on here a couple of weeks ago, last week. You probably heard of Mama Evelyn Johnson, Chicago. She's got an event at the end of this month called Reclaiming Our Youth. So I'm thinking about organizing something online, primarily Clubhouse, that audio app, where the content for that particular channel will be local. I mean, whatever's happening in certain areas of Chicago, that something that you're not going to hear on mainstream news or whatever. I know another guy, he lives in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. And I told him, I said, basically, you probably need to build a platform that gives out news and information, local content that they're not going to get on the Today Show, that they're not going to read in the local newspapers, where you can actually meet people. Just like, see, going back to the baby boomer era, when you turn on an AM, particularly an AM radio station, the content that you heard, the people were local, your businesses were local, you can go to their business, or if it was a church, it was all local. But since the corporate iHeart got in there, they don't have that no more. So I'm looking at it as like a wide open opportunity to focus in on whatever specific local markets that you're interested in, because there's a, what do you call it, basically a news and information desert.
That's fine.
You're in a rural area. I'm sure there's news that happens out in that area, but who covers it?
That's right.
Yeah, who covers it?
And the one thing that I haven't been able to try to figure out, the grapevine, the gossip line.
Right.
If there's a way that you can digitize local neighborhood gossip, I mean, you know, not getting anybody killed or anything.
Now you're talking about raking in billions of dollars.
Yeah. Now,
and
there's,
you know,
a market
that's never been, to my knowledge, that you know what, that's a gold mine. It's totally untapped. You're right. If you can digitize and monetize the neighborhood gossip line.
Yeah. And the other thing too is how many church programs needs advertising? Hey, look, you just give me 50 cents and I'll blast this thing out there and I'll put it up there.
Well,
on,
you know what?
On a website.
It's interesting that you said that. One of the radio stations right near me, and I'm in Polk County, Florida, in Winter Haven, Florida, they stopped taking. Matter of fact, a lot of black radio stations survived for years off of the pastors on weekends.
That's right.
He stopped taking the pastors, and he went out of business.
Yeah.
And the
and
other
look,
two radio stations, they went out of business.
Yeah. And here's the thing, Brother L.A., whenever you deal with the churches, they bring their crowd with them. Now,
They bring communities with them.
That's right. Yeah.
They bring community. So, that is the pulse. And those three stations down here, WWAB, WHNR, and WSR, all have gone out of business.
Yeah.
And they cut out pastors. That's what did it to them.
Yeah. Now, I have a brother-in-law whose wife is a minister. And every morning she has a prayer line.
Mm-hmm.
And by her being a woman, she brings in all of those women from this area on that prayer line. Now, you know, she's just doing it without any,
no monetary attention. She's spiritual needs.
Yeah, but she gets more donations through that than she does in her church.
What you're talking about, I was trying to tell somebody, if you're going black to black, this is just my opinion. It depends on the business, but with certain businesses, one of the most successful business models that I've seen when it comes to black folk is what you just explained. I call it the church business model. Let them in for free. Give some advice for free. Give some content for free, and then just operate off of what they donate.
Yeah, exactly. You know, hey, I don't know how you would bring it in, but look, the average preacher or the average church brings their fan base with them. And the thing is, if you can figure out how to make it interesting for that fan base.
I would say listen to that fan base, because there's a church here where when they have Bible study Tuesday or Wednesday, before Bible study, they have free dinners. You don't have to pay anything. Matter of fact, you can eat. You got to eat it there, though. You just can't eat it. I mean, take a plate and leave. You got to eat it there. But a lot of those people who come in and get the free meal, and ain't no skimpy meal either, okay? Ain't no bologna and cheese sandwich. They give you a nice, hot meal, all right?
Right.
A lot of those people stay over for, the Bible study. And then those who want to donate, put something in the offering, the thing, they, put it in. And that, I'm sure that's one of the ways that they keep that church, those church doors open.
Yeah. Because, look, the average church, well, we've talked about this before. Look, the best cooks in the neighborhood are in the church.
Exactly.
And most churches here have a dining hall. And the thing is, they're missing an opportunity. But the trick is, Brother L.A., nobody has, and we talked about this before, we haven't sit down to strategize on how we can take advantage of the assets in our community. And like you're talking here now, if you're able to digitize something local that's unique to that community, I don't see depending on what the content is, I don't see how it won't work. I just don't. But the thing is, you got to figure out the content and what interests people, and how you can get it digitized to the point that you can bring in some revenue. I just don't know how that's done, but the market is there. Just like Airbnb. I mean, the market was out there. Nobody just didn't figure it out. And, you talked about hacking. You used to hack in Baltimore. And the thing is, look what happened there with Lyft and Uber. They figured it out.
They put that app together. Yeah, because when I was doing the apps weren't out then.
So I just don't know how it was done. They had a scam down here. People had done it right. I believe that they could have really – well, they did take in a lot of money. They had this this blessing plan. They falsely advertised it as a susu. And they said, look, bring in $500 and, you can go in and pass it around and all this foolishness. And I busted them because I sent it out everywhere to everybody I could think of to spread it that, hey, look, it was a scam. But the thing is, that's one of the things, it's never been digitized. And the trick is, down here, where I'm at here, they have these poker machines online now, where these guys can go in and play the poker machines through their phones and the laptops and everything else. But I think you have an idea. You just got to kick it around to see how you can come up with the content. And I heard Mother Evelyn. That's her name, isn't it? Mother Evelyn.
Yeah, Mother Evelyn F. Johnson.
She is on the rock. She's on to something. It's just a matter of how do you get it on to where people can hear it and see it, or just hear it. Because like you said before, these cell phones, everybody's got one just about, and their brother.
Everybody's got one.
Yeah.
Or if they have one, they got access to it.
Oh, they got one. Trust me. If you're in the hood, you ain't breathing if you don't have a cell phone. So even when you don't eat, you got to – I know crackheads.
But I know women in developing countries that, you know, they don't know. Sometimes they only – because where they going – the native kids, they eat rice all the time. But the one thing they do have, and they got kids, because one I was talking to earlier this year, her situation was she's got two kids, and the school district, due to the pandemic, everybody was, you know, there was school, but it had to be attended online. So her problem was, her challenge was, rather, was she's got one phone, but she needs the phone, but her two kids need it also, because that's how they go to school. But she had a phone. So you're right, they've got them.
That's a very interesting idea you got, Brother Ellie. I'm going to kick it around, and I'm going to think about it. But the thing is,
the audience that I used to go, man, I used to get on a station and give me 15 minutes. If I had an hour show, just like, you know, on an AM gospel station, black, and if I get 30 calls an hour, that would be my goal. I know 20 of them I can see the next day. All right.
Yeah.
Now, so a lot of those people, that same market, they don't listen to radio no more. Okay. Like you take Pleasant Stephens. By the way, he's coming out of the hospital today because he was laid up for about 3 weeks or a month. So he's getting out of the hospital today to go home. I'll give an update tomorrow on that. But Pleasant's like 83, 84 years old. So a lot of, like, just like you said, you haven't listened to the car radio. I haven't listened to a radio in the car. And even if I did, it's on either Sirius or somebody's podcast in somebody's car. So I'm looking at, all right, that market is switched to online. So everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got internet connection. But the thing is, if you're trying to, and my idea is, no matter what you're selling, I think it sells better if it's offline. All right.
Yeah.
And people see it face to face. Now I know I'm like anybody else. I order stuff off Amazon, and I got phone apps. I got groceries delivered to the phone. But some things, you know, you need to be face to face with people. So then I was thinking about, and then I went to the history of radio and all that, because I was looking at, if you look at how people gained power, I mean, from Adolf Hitler, Abel Perron, the Jackson 5, the Beatles, all these people did it. I mean, television played a part, but radio, audio played a huge part. I looked at books on it. I ain't found a book on this stuff yet. So that's why I asked you that question. Because I'm looking at, man, there's an untapped market there that iHeart and these people that have bought these corporate radio stations haven't touched. And I'm looking at these audio apps. Now, to be on Blog Talk, we pay something. It's not much compared to what Radio Time used to be. But the audio apps are absolutely free for right now. So I'm looking at, you know what, this tap, even with the Blog Talk thing, like if I had It's My House Chicago or It's My House Burlington, North Carolina, where we got people on the ground that tap into what you said, that neighborhood grapevine in Burlington or Chicago or wherever. Because those people buy things too. And like you said, I'm glad you put it up, even if it's 50 cents. But 50 cents adds up.
That's right.
It adds up.
You know, we used to sell bags of coal back in the day. And we used to sell 100-pound bags of coal. And a guy came in the community, and he started selling 50-pound bags of coal for half price. And the bags looked like 100-pound bags. And he told my daddy, he said, look, it's best to get a fast nickel than to try and rely on a big dime. He said, it's better to get a fast nickel than a slow dime. Well, the thing is this, Brother L.A., it's just like those 99-cent stores. Hey, when people see they're getting something and they're getting it cheap, they'll buy a whole lot of it not realizing they're spending a lot of money. So right. If you could get it for a quarter or 50 cent, you'd be surprised at how quick those little small amounts would add up.
Definitely.
But like I said before, it's the content. In fact, what you just mentioned, if it's Chicago, hey, look, the Chicago grapevine, give me the scuttlebutt in your neighborhood and I'll broadcast it. And in order for you to hear the scuttlebutt, you got to plug in 50 cents like you did a damn jukebox.
Right.
And you just go ahead on and wrap it up, you know. But
you didn't hit on
the content is the key.
You're right. Right. Well, the neighborhood grapevine, for instance, there's so much news that, I mean, for instance, so-and-so died or whatever. You know, somebody might in the neighborhood might want to buy that house. Or, you know, so-and-so got code violations. All right, let's get together and let's go cut their lawn, you know, cut the grass. Or so-and-so, you know, selling fish dinners on Friday night. Anybody that want to pre-order, you know, call this number.
That's right.
There's a whole lot of activity going on in the church, in a neighborhood, that will never be on the Today Show or the local newspaper, and that's all right. You're addressing a new a wealth of information that people they'd be willing to pay for it.
But, Brother L.A., how many churches are in Chicago? Programs, evening programs. Or, hey, look, you know, a certain minister wants everybody to know that they're putting on a special past appreciation, or we're going to have a dinner at the church. And all you need to do is just give me a dollar, and I'll broadcast this thing on my neighborhood grapevine. Anytime you have a program, just give me a dollar, and I'll let everybody know they're subscribing to my program. That's the thing. Are you there?
I'm going to wrap this up, but more than likely, I'm going to be calling you later on this afternoon if you're available.
I'm always available. I'm retired and retarded.
Okay.
So.
Okay, I'm going to give you a call. Probably give me about 3 or 4 hours. I'm going to give you a call back.
Okay, because I'm going to get a haircut now.
Okay, all right. Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
All right.